This October marks the end of Paula Meehan's 3-year tenure as Ireland's Chair of Poetry. Tomorrow night we'll see the launch of Imaginary Bonnets with Real Bees in Them, a collection of the 3 annual lectures she has delivered during her time as Ireland's Chair of Poetry. The book will be launched by Yvan Boland, and Paula Meehan and Yvan are with me now in studio. The end of the 3 years as it approaches now, Paula, you started this at quite a time, really, in terms of Irish poetry, a time of bereavement. It was just after the death of Seamus Heaney. How did that feel initially, first of all, at that moment when you were starting out, and how has it fed into the 3 years?
Yes, well, Seamus Heaney was a very involved member of the trust to which I work. So the trustees were in a state of shock as well. And those griefs that were everywhere at the time, and not just in any narrow idea of a poetry community, but right out in all, right across the island. But there was a real sense of something tremendous and something we could be proud of suddenly taken from us. So I came in under those very emotional, really, circumstances. And everywhere I went, that was the first kind of charge of this work, was the grief around Seamus's passing. So that really set the tenor of that first year. And I was based up in Belfast and I lived up there for a while and worked with the students in the Seamus Heaney Centre for Poetry, but also out in the province, as they call it, with writing groups all over the province. And I suppose what really impressed me was how in those groups they are actually making the piece. You know, that's where it's made, in groups like that, in writing groups where language is put under enormous pressure, where scrutiny is put on the way things are said and the ideas that inform what is said. So for me, that was a very emotional but very rich introduction to the work.
Yvan, you were nodding in agreement with much of what Paula said there.
Yeah, and it was a huge sense of somebody who had died too young with excellent work, only recently having Human Chain, his recent book, was a beautiful book. But there was also the sense, which I think confirms something about poetry, that his voice remained in many of these poems. And so I think it was a double-edged conversation that was going on. And I think it's extremely interesting that Paula went into the job, which is a complex job, taking poetry between universities and communities, between conversations about poetry and practice of poetry in the craft workshops. And I think it is important that Paula began that in the aftermath of Seamus's death, with a sense of how much poetry can matter, but how much a loss can be.
In fact, you, just before we came to air, you said there was one sentence that really, because you read the 3 lectures in the book, there was one that really jumped out at you and that you were keen to share. And it actually fits in with what you're just saying.
It's in the Artemis lecture, which is really beautiful, but it's at a point where Paula is talking about going back to a younger self and maybe finding words for that younger self that are both consolation and encouragement from memory. And that she would want to say, and this is the quotation, to tell her nothing is ever lost that has made its way into poetry. And it's an absolutely beautiful sentence, and it's very compelling in the idea of what it means in a life for readers and writers to have that.
The Artemis lecture that Yvan mentions there, it's the second of the 3 lectures, in fact, The Solace of Artemis. That lecture takes its title from a poem of yours. Maybe we could hear that poem, Paula, but before you go into the poem, give us the image behind it and the idea behind the lecture itself.
Okay, well, this was the lecture I gave when I was based in Trinity College. And just in 2011, researchers at Trinity College, at Penn State University and at Oxford University took bare bones from 27 cave sites around Ireland, and they sampled the mitochondrial DNA, which is the genetic line through the mothers. And they discovered, they proved that every single polar bear alive today is descended from one Irish brown bear mother. She's the mitochondrial Eve of the polar bear. Now, there was no sense of Ireland because we were under an ice sheet and it was before settlement. But somewhere maybe 20,000 years ago at peak ice, they believe this happened. So that just blew my mind, you know, that idea. And the way we read into the distant past, the way you could read a poem, you can read in fossilized materials and things cut in amber. And I dedicated the poem and the lecture to Katrina Crowe, who is our great national archivist, who opened, you know, the censuses of 1901 and 1911 in preparation for this massive year of self-examination, the 2016 centenary. So Katrina's work in the archives, I was wanted to have a little bit of fun with that too, you know, the recent memory and this long, long memory that is held in bare bones in Irish caves. So the solace of Artemis. I read that every polar bear alive has mitochondrial DNA from a common mother, an Irish brown bear who once roved out across the last ice age, and I am comforted. It has been a long, hot morning with the children of the machine, their talk of memory, of buying it, cheap. But I, memory keeper by trade, scan time coded in the golden hive mind of eternity. I burn my books, I burn my whole archive, a blaze that sears synapses flaring cell to cell, where memory sleeps in the wax hexagonals of my doomed and melting comb. I see him loping towards me across the vast ice field to where I wait in the cave mouth, dreaming my cubs about the den, my honeyed ones smelling of snow and sweet oblivion.
Paula Meehan reading her poem The Solace of Artemis, which is also the title of one of the lectures she gave in her period as Ireland's Chair of Poetry. And those three lectures have just been published. The book will be launched tomorrow night by Yvan Bullen. As we listen to that poem that Paula read for us there, Yvan, she talks about the memory keeper by trade. To what extent is poetry not just about, you know, keeping a memory alive, but for the contemporary moment that you're bearing witness to something, that do you have a responsibility to bear witness to something in the contemporary moment?
You know, I'd be a bit slow, Sean, to call it a responsibility, but certainly a compulsion, certainly there in poets to give a witness of the moment they're in, which is who they are. And sometimes you go back to poetry and that moment is gone and it's harder to access the poem. But sometimes you go back and that memory just flares up like a match because of that. Paula has a wonderful reference to Yeats as a dreamer. Honeybees come build in the empty house of the stair. You know, going into that poem, we enter those shadows of the Civil War that he was in and his sense of almost delusion and regret that he was in. So, yeah, I think it is a large part of poetry.
Yeah, but it was compulsion rather than responsibility that set him to write it, you would say.
Yes.
Paula, the poem that we just heard touches on this Greek myth. But one of the things that struck me in the lectures when I read through them was just how personal some of the memories were. One that really struck me was your grandfather and how he taught you reading, particularly using the letter O. Maybe you tell that story.
That was Watty, my grandfather, who was a great presence in my life. I spent a lot of my childhood with my grandparents because my parents were back and forth, like so many in the 50s, to London, as it happened, for work. But my grandfather would spend a lot of afternoons minding me. And I suppose to keep me quiet, he used to give me the cast-off sheets of his newspaper. And he decided one day he would teach me to read and write. So first of all, he said, we'll start with the O's. And he gave me one of those B4 pencils, you know, the jet black ones. And I was to fill in every O on the sheet of newsprint. So I totally got into this patterning. And the whole page then were all these little staring eyes. And, you know, where you got two O's in moon or swoon or raccoon, you'd have the two O's. So then we moved on to like D's and B's in closed space. And but somewhere between maybe the R and the W, I was reading.
That personal element, Ivan, I mean, it's there in the lectures that we get in the book from Paula, but even when writing poetry, I guess it has to be there too. How costly is that, if that's the right word? You know, how difficult is it to be personal as a poet, but yet not for it to become confessional or overbearing?
It's always a big debate, I think, both outside in poetry and inside a poet. Self-expression is not art. And an awful lot of the first drafts of any poem that you write are just going to be self-expression and may never be art. But often what makes a poem so memorable is not just that it's personal, but it's a personal truth. And when, I think with a really excellent poem, you don't put it down and say, that's beautiful. You put it down and say, that's true.
Rather than ask you to go straight into a reading of one of your poems after saying that, I'll ask Paula, we're going to get Ivan to read the poem Amber. And you mentioned this in the first lecture, in fact, which has the title given to the book, Imaginary Bonnets with Real Bees in Them. Maybe you'd tell us why this poem particularly spoke to you, and then we'll have Ivan read it for us.
Yeah, well, I came across what they believe is the kind of missing link for the bee. A lot of the first lecture, I used the bees as, I suppose, both motif, but they're also the real bees. I came across some research that the most ancient version of the bee they have found was in amber from Myanmar. And it was the full creature was in there. And they call it the missing link. It's kind of, it has some wasp-like features. But here they had this, again, reading into the past, they had this fully formed creature in amber. And they dated it to 35 to 40 million years ago, you know. And I just think that stretch of time, and here we are within, you know, 100 years of this meta-development, we're likely to extinct the bees, you know? So this is one of the bees in my bonnet. But in Ivan's poem, which I think is a masterwork, there's this beautiful creature caught in amber. And that idea that something can be held across time, across millions of years, in what is the weeping resin of ancient forests.
This poem was actually written for my mother fairly near to her death. She had given me a piece of amber. And, you know, just in Paula's very eloquent description of what amber can do, it for one moment consoled me into thinking maybe memory can do that. Amber. It never mattered that there was once a vast grieving. Trees on their hillsides, in their groves, weeping, a plastic gold dropping through seasons and centuries to the ground until now. On this fine September afternoon, from which you are absent, I am holding, as if my hand could store it, an ornament of amber you once gave me. Reason says this: the dead cannot see the living will never see the dead again. The clear air we need to find each other in is gone forever. Yet this resin, once collected seeds, leaves, and even small feathers, as it fell and fell, which now in a sunny atmosphere seem alive as they ever were, as though the past could be present, and memory itself a Baltic honey, a chafing at the edges of the scene, a showing off of just how much can be kept safe inside a flawed translucence.
Ivan Boland with her poem Amber, which features in Paula Meehan's lectures as Ireland's Chair of Poetry, and those lectures are published by UCD Press in a book called Writings from the Ireland Chair of Poetry, Imaginary Bonnets with Real Bees in Them, and they are by Paula Meehan. The book will be launched tomorrow night at the Royal Irish Academy in Dublin by Ivan Boland, and joining Ivan and Paula on the evening will be the former Chair of Poetry, our Harry Clifton, and the incoming Ireland Chair of Poetry, Elaine Ní Chuilleanán. Ireland Chair of Poetry.org will give you all of the details on that event and the work of the chair.